pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Welcome to Declarations of War. We are your hosts, Alexei Picard and Levitain.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, indeed. As you know, Declarations of War is Noir's official podcast. Noir, the oldest, longest-running mercenary corp in the game. We are recruiting, and we're also actually looking for contracts right now. We're in the middle of one. It's about to wrap up. Would love to have something sexy going on over the Christmas break. So if anyone's out there planning a major offensive or is afraid a major offensive is being planned on them, please give me a call. Our top story is not so good news. Actually, pretty bad news. About as bad as it gets. CCP Falcon left the EVE community during our recording break. Fuck.
Yeah, it's someone who's been with the EVE community for a long time, and regardless of whoever they are, it's always sad to see people move on like that, people who stood up for the community. And Falcon, particularly recently, has really been quite vocal of late.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for a better embodiment of the voice of the community. I know not everyone liked Falcon for various reasons, but like, to me, there's no doubt that, like, he had the voice of the community. Like, when you see him post and you see him talk publicly, he really understood EVE players and knew how to communicate in ways that, you know, like, resonated with us, even if he didn't always agree with what he was saying.
He was like our spirit animal, wasn't he? He seemed to kind of encapsulate at least the kind of prevailing thought of the EVE community at that time. We were kind of rooting for him.
Yeah. And you know, he came from the community. Player named Varone, CEO of Vito Corp, which is one of the best corps in the game. It's hard to see him go, especially now that he and Guard are both gone. It's like, well, shit. What's left?
A brave new world in Pearl Abyss, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, and Team Talos.
Yeah, we do have Team Talos, so we still have Fozzy, we still have Ryze, but a lot of the prominent names that the EVE community would be familiar with are moving on, and it doesn't feel like there are names replacing them. Only time will tell what the effect of that is, but it can't be good.
Yeah, I think it's certainly, whenever you look at this, when you look at the kind of general community right now, is that things are very much on a, I wouldn't say a stagnation, but things aren't really moving right now. There's not a lot of movement in NullSec, like big wars going down. There's little updates. We're starting to get a little bit of momentum now from Talos in terms of some updates, which we'll be going into later on in the recording. But at the same time, you also see long established veterans who had the players back, you know, heading out of CCP, and as you're saying, no one really stepping up to say, look, guys, this is the new vision. This is where we're going to be 6, 12, 24 months. This is what we're going to be doing. And I kind of feel like that CCP needs to really step forward with that particular flag right now. They've got a very loyal fan base in the EVE community. I don't know of many other games where people will stay with a game for decades and give it so much time. And they really do need to come out here and show us what they've got planned, at least in my opinion.
It seems like most of the posting going on now is CCP Convict, who I'm not too familiar with, but he's been pretty active on some of the recent release threads.
Yeah, I wonder if we can get him on here. That'd be something.
Yeah, indeed. Well, speaking of those changes, there have been quite a few. Most of them, I would say, pretty good. Looking at our show notes, like, oh.
Looking at the show notes, thinking, right, how are we going to segue into this one now?
Yeah, I guess let's just dive into it. So there have been a bunch of releases since we've last recorded. A lot of these were talked about at EVE Vegas, and we talked about them in the EVE Vegas show. but now they are real. We get to see actual numbers. I guess the first thing we should hit is the rapid fire patch, which is code for an autocannon buff and some changes to Mimitar ships.
Yeah, in brief terms, autocannons across the board got a rate of fire increase across the board themselves. Some of the penalties to, or some of the changes to T2 ammo, so barrage ammo has had its fall off extended slightly. I think hail has had its tracking penalty reduced, and several of the other Mimitar ships have had little bonus changes. So slight increases, for example. So the Tempest Fleet Tempest has a 7.5% bonus instead of a 5% bonus. I think that's also the same with the Stabber Fleet issue in terms of how it's rate of fire or damage. I can't quite remember right now, but I'll look it up. A couple of ships got an extra bonus, the Bellaclose, which you don't often see this. You only ever see it in its T2 variant. Now has an accuracy bonus for its missiles, which is kind of nice. But cements it as a slightly more potent support ship, though of course the only real use for a Bellaclose is an oversized Vigil, and then most people would argue just bring a Vigil.
Yeah, I think that's why it struggles to find footing in the meta. The Vigil is so effective at what it does. The Bellaclose does the same thing, but not, I mean, it does it technically as good, but it's not quite as survivable. And it's more expensive and doesn't really bring a lot of extra value on top of that.
Yeah.
I don't know where this Bellaclose would fall with the new bonus. I suppose there's a slight niche, you know, if you've got a lot of battleships in your fleet and not a lot of anti-frigate ships, and you want an anti-frigate ship, you can guess throw the Bellaclose in there. It seems like it would do that all right. But that's a pretty specific set of circumstances.
Yeah. And I think really, if you're really looking for point defense on that with battleships itself, bring hacks at that point, because they would tank far easier. The Bellaclose is the T1 cruiser. It's got 5 mids, but one of them's going to be on a prop mod. One of them's going to be, for at least one's going to be a turret target painter. So you really have to either brick it or do something else with it. And for those who are not quite familiar with Vigils and just how OP you can get them, Vigils you can have to target paint people and lock people over 150 kilometers away. So you can basically have this frigate basically perma Michael Walk driving out of everything but sniper ship range, target painting and whoring on every kill mail you have.
And even if they are sniper ships, your Michael Walk drive speed is pretty fast. You're going to be effectively untrackable except by certain ships.
So you have to dedicate sectors or ships to go out and chase them down. And again, if you kill a Vigil, what's a few million? So
yeah, I mean, if you think a fully fit T2 one, it's going to be less than 5 mil, and most of the time you don't need to T2 it, so you're talking like 2.5, 3.
Yeah, a couple of other little changes as well. We saw, I think, that the Typhoon got a slight bonus to its accuracy, or to its application bonus, which was quite nice. And I think I'm just trying to read this right, yeah, I don't think the Cinnable got a bonus, but I think that got hit by one of the other
it got nerfed
buffs.
A little bit. The warp speed and warp acceleration have been decreased to 25% as opposed to 50%.
So that's not a nerf. I mean, basically what happened was, and this brings us to the next update, which is the warp speed buff. So, and we may have already discussed this, but the Angel Cartel ships had a 50% roll bonus as being Angel ships. So you... One of the ships I like to fly is a Cinnable, because I often fly it with 2 hyperspatial rigs. And before this change, it was doing 7.6 AU a second. So you could warp it across a system as about as fast as a Scepter, which is really insane in Nullsec when you've got huge amounts of territory to cross. Then the update hit, and suddenly this thing was doing 9 AU a second. And that's just broken, because you now have a Cinnable that can catch up to Scepters. So they reduced the roll bonus, and now it's down to 7.6. So it hasn't really changed. If anything, the autocannon Cinnable, the flanker Cinnable, now gets a slight buff because of the rate of fire changes and the range changes to barrage. So it can put down barrage easily over 30 kilometers away.
Yeah, let's talk about the changes to the weapon systems. I think that's important context for all the other changes we've talked about. All the autocannon rate of fire increases have been increased by 3%. So that's a damage buff for all Mimitar ships that use autocannons across the board. and the range for falloff has been increased by 5% base. So that'll play into all the bonuses we're talking about above. Like they've mentioned, Barrage and Hail have gotten some changes. Hail slightly reduced tracking speed by 5%. I don't think that's going to kneecap anything terribly much. Probably make it a little more difficult to apply ship to ship, but certainly if you're shooting one class up, you should be perfectly fine. Barrage fall off increasing by 50%. That's massive. Or excuse me, increasing to 50%, an increase of
10%. I think it was 40. It was 30-40 or 40-50. But yeah, it was like a
40.
Yeah. So I mean, most anyone who flies Mimitar knows that all the cannons you basically fire and fall off, and you look at the DPS value in your EFT when you pipher up your ship, and then you dream of ever reaching that DPS because you know you're never going to shoot half of it because you're going to fire and fall off. But fall off does mean that your weapons can strike at some insane distances. So Macarials with autocannons can easily reach out and touch people 60 plus kilometers away. Same with the Tornado. You can have Vagabonds at 40 plus kilometers, same as Cinnables.
I think it's also worth pointing out that the way the DPS decrease works with falloff, the DPS will fall off more and more the further past falloff you go. So if you're increasing the total falloff range, if you're not fighting at those extreme ranges, it's actually a slight DPS increase if you're fighting sort of at standard ranges of, like, you know, 7.5 to 10 kilometers, 15 kilometers, 20 to 25 kilometers. You're going to be getting a little bit more out of these guns at that range than you normally would. So if you're, like, tackling in a Vagabond or something like that, you're going to be doing better, not just to the raw DPS increase, but also because your falloff math has changed.
It's also important to note that there were some changes that weren't so good for people. So the Munin took a slight nerf than this one. It took a base reduction in its velocity from 250 to 235, so minus 15. It also took a slight increase to its SIG radius and a reduction on its optimal range bonus from 10% per level to 7.5%. So this is a slight nerf to the artillery Munin fleets that are pretty commonplace and have been commonplace for the last year plus.
Oh, hey, we are joined by a late coming Andy astronaut, NOR director. Whose microphone is muted? Well, as soon as Andy gets his mic sorted out, we will have him on the show. Very exciting to have him. He was involved in an engagement we're going to be talking about a bit later on in the show. And that will be very juicy.
And another change as well was that the assault damage control got a slight change as well, so the activation time and duration was decreased by 10% across the board.
All right, can you hear me now?
There he is.
Hey.
Andy, we're just talking about the rapid fire patch and about to move on to the Triglavian Dread.
Nice. Yeah, I've yet to see any of them or like see the BPCs for them, but I'm pretty excited to see them actually get built and be in game.
I was excited. I will admit I'm a little bit less excited once people did the math on how the Triglavian weapon and the siege module and the bonuses are all going to interact. Basically, you're going to get a minute of full DPS on one cycle. So this ship is basically only going to be really valuable if you can get it in a place where you have two cycles. That kind of sucks.
Yeah, and Dreads are pretty much glass cannons in the meta these days because everyone of them over has a Titan or a Scoop Super Cap.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it.
I was doing the numbers on it. I was kind of thinking, well, where would the Triglavian Dread be used? I mean, obviously, point-blank in knife fight range again, but if you're in point-blank knife fight range and you want max DPS, no, it's, as you said, because of that spool-up time, every other Dreadnought basically hammers it. The Phoenix can put down over 10k DPS straight away. The Revelation, the Moros can all do the same. I believe the Naglfar can also do the same with ACs as well. So if you're coming in at zero with the aim to get maximum DPS, again, this is not the ship for you, and you pretty much might as well just call it primary and insure it, because it's going to get murdered. And then
even if you don't, though, like, keep this in mind: it's not just that 5 minutes or two siege cycles or whatever, and you're good to go. You have to be shooting the same target without deactivating. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it has some slight bonuses to where you might see. So, for example, wormhole engagements with Triglavian ships, you often see people running down curses, just cycling the tracking disruptors through the Leshaks to just reset all their DPSs. You can't easily tracking disrupt a dread at all once it's in siege, so there's that to consider. You also have to consider the range. So Triglavian ships can have pretty insane range for what is technically speaking a short range weapon system. So the range ammo can reach out to about 130 kilometers. Now the only dread that can get similar range is the Revelation with Scorch ammunition, which can do roughly similar under a similar setup. I suspect the Phoenix might get close to it, but you've got missile travel time and application to consider on that thing, and that's a whole different story. But in short, if you were dropping a dread in at range and you got a horrific bounce, again, the Revelation is going to do more damage to a target 100 kilometers away. And by the time the Trig Dread actually matches up to it, it's probably drifted out of range.
Yeah, I still like the design of it. I think it looks cool. As an FC, I don't know if there are too many circumstances where I want my pilots in one. It would have to be like someone that doesn't have a super, and I'm trying to kill other supers, and I know that they're going to be there for a while, and I'm having trouble breaking the tank.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting concept, and I'd obviously like it from a structure point of view, because these things can really go to town on structures because they can just sit there at max DPS. But I don't see Dread solo sieging such structures or even in small groups. And I can see this ship being horrific bait or a really hilarious bait because of its resistances. Like you drop it as part of a bomb. And then when the enemy goes, oh, great, it's a Zenatra, go and kill it. Actually, just not siege it altogether and just have it fact-shred.
Yeah, I like it.
I guess my question would be, like, I haven't looked at how much tank it has relative to the other dreads. And so I know that in our group, or at least in RC, sometimes they'll use, like, an active tank cap dread on a structure to pause it so that we can just kind of, like, fight an enemy fleet without worrying about a timer ticking down. And I can see how if you had one of these on a structure and it was well tanked, you could easily tank the structure and not just like pause the timer, but like you said, ramp it up on a structure. And it makes kind of just selling these dreads on a structure that's not necessarily well defended pretty reasonable. So I can kind of see that niche for it, but it would have to be able to tank pretty well.
I mean, it will do. I mean, it's got... It's got 8 low slots, and it's got the highest base armor of any dreadnought out there. So, your typical cookie cutter fit, even this is with 2 entropic radiation sink damage mods, and this thing's rocking 3.4 million effective hit points. And you've got to imagine anyone who's going into that kind of role is probably low-grade slaved and is full tank fit. So I think this thing will probably get close to nearly 4-5 million effective hit points. So it's going to take a doomsday or two at least on the face.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the niche where I can see it being used, but that's kind of the question is like, is it going to be cost effective to use it for that, or is it better to just use the super and ping off to a safe kind of thing and let your fighters do the work?
Yeah, these are reasonable things to ask, and as I say, I think this is an interesting concept. In the current metas and the current patterns that we understand, though, I think that there are ships that do it cheaper for better, but I can see where the niche role arrives on this one.
I wonder if they kind of launched it pre-nerfed a little bit, because I'm looking at its bonuses. 3% reduction to cycle time for the main weapon. They could be upping that to 5. I could see that moved up, maybe even 7.5. Like, fix the spool up timer element. Because that's really the issue, that it takes so long to get to that theoretical DPS, and meanwhile, other dreads are going to be out DPSing it. Like, someone ran the math. If you have one damage mod on there versus other dreads with a damage mod, it would take it about 7.5 minutes to make up the DPS. It's a long time for a dreadnought.
Yeah, when you put it in that context, it's kind of underwhelming.
You know, you strap more damage mods onto it, that'll go down a little bit, but still. I'll see. I'm still going to get one because it looks badass. I'll use it just to pimp it around. But I'm
still waiting for my Angel one. Remember the concept ones of those years ago?
Yeah. I don't remember if I ever saw the art for that. Did they ever put out art for it?
They put out some very rough kind of drawings, which all looked really nice, but they were very much at the kind of the prototype stage and never came anything, never really came to anything else.
This is actually pretty exciting, potentially. I say that potentially because it's, you know, it's like one step in the right direction, but at least CCP is doing something. On December 10th, they're making a number of changes to Citadels to make them easier to kill. And harder to spam. So on the kill front, they're increasing the, quote, jitter range on reinforcement timers from 2 hours to 3 hours. So a defender will set a time, say like 11 o'clock, and it could come out anywhere between 9 p.m. and 1 p.m. Now it could come out anywhere between 6 p.m. and 2 a.m. So that's pretty good. It definitely helps decrease the effectiveness of time zone tanking a little bit. Makes it a little harder for defenders to plan. But also a little harder for attackers to plan. Overall, I'm good with it, though.
Yeah, the one main complaint about that I've heard is from like wormhole people that do evictions. Because they say it's when they plan an eviction, because the times are so much shorter in a wormhole, you essentially like set aside the entire time for all those timers and the time to like do hole control and all that kind of stuff. And so their argument is now they have to do hole control for an additional 2 hours on each side kind of thing, and have everybody online and like all men on deck for longer. It's kind of interesting because I think from Null perspective and like everything I've done, this seems like a really good change, but from their perspective, a lot of them aren't super happy with it.
I could see that. You're still going to get the definitive enforcement timer after you RF it. So I feel like you could adjust your plans after you figure out when you actually need to get stuff together. But I could see that point a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my thought too. It's like you'll still know when the timer is. It's just if you're planning ahead. So it's kind of like, again, something that hurts like a little bit of a like niche play style, which is that like eviction groups. I think in general for people who are fighting in wormholes or like live in wormholes, it's not like the biggest like detrimental change. It's just for those groups that like are like, okay, this week we're evicting X group kind of thing, and everyone needs to be here from this time to this time so that we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Also, these guys tend to be loaded anyway, so I mean, compared to everyone else, I'm not that sympathetic, but I do see where they're coming from. But whole eviction and hole control itself is such a different concept, because you can lock down basically an area of space so much that no one can get through.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my thing, is like my gut reaction was like, this isn't something that you can complain about too much because it's not that big of a difference, and like you said, you know, it's hole control for an hour or two more or something like that. But just from like the one contract we took in a wormhole and how hard it is to get in and out and like how much effort that goes into like constantly scanning and constantly warping to things, it's like not necessarily trivial. Like it takes a lot of work to like hold and maintain hole control for hours. So I guess like I give them a little bit of credit there. Like it can be pretty tedious, and I know that's like kind of part of the game style, so you have to accept that part, but I can also see how doing that for an extra hour or two would be pretty like grinding.
I don't quite understand how they'd have to do it for the extra hour, though. These are theoretical hours. You wouldn't actually...
Yeah, that's very true. So
I mean, let's say if you did two structures, though, and one came out plus 2 hours, one came out minus 2 hours. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that was their argument. It's like worst case scenario kind of thing, is you're there for much longer. And yeah, when you put it in the context of like multiple structures that are all getting grinded, not just one.
Yep, it makes sense. And speaking of how that will work, though, defenders will no longer be able to set a specific day for the timer. I think this is a pretty massive change. The way it'll work now is the structure's exit reinforcement, the next available hour with the jitter thing, after the following durations, So a day and a half of wormhole space. So you reinforce something, it'll come out a day and a half later, at least. Low and null security, 2.5. High sec, 4.5. Why? Fucking why high sec? That means you need to reinforce the structure, like, almost immediately. I don't get it.
I mean, isn't that already kind of the case, though? So I think it's, like, there's annoying. A big problem there, and they just didn't solve it. They, like, kind of, sort of, were like, yeah, look, you can maybe get it in a week now. But, yeah, they haven't really solved that issue.
Basically, to kill a high-security structure, you need to vortex someone for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's another example of CCP, as you mentioned, a tiny baby step in one particular direction, but not quite anticipating all the permutations here. And again, I think that particularly with low power structures, though, there needs to be some significant change to how low power structures are compared to a fully armed and operational battle station.
Yeah, currently they just lose one timer. So if it's a low security, a low power structure in high security space, you could kill it in one deck.
Yeah, so that's what I was about to kind of point out, is this will help with that instance. It just doesn't help with full power structures.
Yeah, particularly for War HQ is what we've noticed working in high sec or the few contracts recently. The attacker basically doesn't have to worry about anything, because if your war headquarters just gets attacked, just let the deck expire. It'll never ever die. Someone would have to like deck you back to actually kill it. That doesn't seem like it hits the spirit of that mechanic.
Yeah, and the whole mechanic was kind of revolving around this idea that there's a way to end a war, right? And the way to end the war is to defeat the enemy's HQ, and it kind of like motivates you to actually fight and not just stock up for the entire time. But when you go and RF something, and then you know like the war's either going to be over or it's going to be extended for like 2 weeks, that's not a lot of motivation to like actually get out and undock and fight your attackers, you know?
Yeah, you can't actually end the war early. The best you could do is force them to let it expire naturally.
Yeah, exactly. Which ends up being what a lot of the attackers do, because they can just let the war expire and then let it cool off and save their structure, and then they can just go back at it again and rinse and repeat. But it's still like a frustrating mechanic, I think.
Yeah, I would like to see it shortened to like 3 days. If they had to. Or just unify it. Why do low and null and high sec have to have different day counters? Does it make sense?
Yeah, I'd just standardize it all down to like 2.5 days and just go with it. Because, I mean, then you'll definitely see kind of people trying to push it towards days where they know they can get people on, but also it adds that urgency to it, like they used to do the old POS mechanics. You know, stuff was done right. We've got a timer to go to, boys.
Yep, absolutely. And they're also doing some things to reduce spam, at least a little bit, in NullSec at least. Where your ADM is 4.0 or higher, and the iHub is held by an alliance, people that are not of that alliance will not be able to deploy medium structures. So that's Asnors, Astrahouses, Rytarus. They'll still be able to deploy staging Fortizars in someone's system, but not spam these smaller structures. I think this is an all-around solid change with pretty much no downside.
Yep, solid. Astrahouse spam is particularly grindy and irritating, and due to the mechanics. And this is even after they changed it so that Astrahouses have like a 15-minute kind of vulnerability before they start to anchor, like preparing to anchor, where they could still be attacked. Once someone got an Astrahouse and you're up in space, it was just an irritation and an utter a nuisance to try and knock them down. So to restrict this now is helpful, but it also helps for alliances now to be really up on their ADM management. They need to be keeping their ADMs 4+ at all times.
Yeah, really puts a lot more emphasis in the ADM than I think even the Entosis being multiplied by it. Pretty cool. I like it. I think it's also a slight buff to mercs like us, because now, you know, there's a reason for us to go in and lower someone's ADMs beyond just a vague make our Entosis timer slightly faster. This is a pretty big advantage if you can get the ADM below 4.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. It hopefully kind of opens, like, especially for us, contracts, but just in general, it makes camping systems, like, worth it. it's not just, oh, like, you're a nuisance. It's like, oh, this is actually doing something and will be, like, relevant for either trying to take this system or making it harder for our enemies to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah, there's a specific breakpoint. I think one of the issues with the ADMs in Entosis, it's nice in that it's a sliding scale, but it's also worse in that there's no clear goal for, like, a camper attacking to lower it. There's no, like, target ADM, aside from, I guess, one, but that's pretty difficult to do if the system's occupied at all. This is, like, achievable, significant, and clear for all involved. We'll see how it plays out, but I think it's a pretty exciting change.
Yeah, I think it's a really good stepping point, kind of like all these changes. Like, I think that I would prefer maybe like two steps kind of thing, where there's kind of multiple tiers, where it's still a strict cutoff that gives you a goal, but maybe not just like above or below kind of thing. But I think if this goes well, there's like easy room to add that in if it works as a good mechanic.
And finally, a little nod to Faction Warfare. I know that the feature like this has been long called for by the Faction Warfare community. Enemy Faction Warfare groups that are anchoring structures in their enemy space will not provide tether. And if you are in an attacking faction to a given space, you will not receive tether from any structure. So you can't put a structure down that offers tether to anyone, and you can't use any structures that are already there that will offer tether. I dream you can still dock, but you won't.
You can still plan a station.
That's pretty huge.
Honestly, having previously spent some time with Shadow Cartel, who are reforming as well, and I wish them all the best. This Faction Warfare has needed changes like this. Again, I think it's another case of CCP making baby steps, but this one is at least in the right direction. And it does now give some impetus or importance now to actually holding the space under your faction banners. Because if you're in the Mimitar faction and you go on a joyride over to Amar areas, you have less places to hide now. You can't just walk to some random Astra House dock up and just laugh at everyone.
I forget about docking games at those structures.
It's just as soon as you're in Tether, it's irritating at night. So it gives Realms a little bit more of an impetus to find a good NPC station that's not a kick out, and go from there. So again, this is one of those changes where I can't really see a downside to it. So I hope that they build upon this and start and do more with Faction Warfare and do more with LoSEG in general.
Real briefly, they're experimenting with no downtime coming up. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, I don't think there's any reason there needs to be a downtime. If it's technically possible not to have one, I would say just keep it running.
From what I understood of what was written, I think it's the technology behind the server itself in terms of it basically clearing data and almost kind of blank slating it a little bit. But clearly they struggle with what time to put the downtime onto, because obviously we're now getting players from all around the time clock, obviously with the Korean client launching. So we've now got a new time zone incoming, which is very close to the Australian time zone. So and those guys have really been punished about with the downtime being where it is for years now.
Yeah, I actually read into this a little bit. It sounds like basically it's not strictly necessary to have downtime, but because of the fact that downtime used to be like a strict necessity, they did a lot of things conveniently at that time. So it basically let them be kind of lazy with how they wrote the code, because instead of writing the code where it can run while the server's running, they run the code during downtime so that they don't have to worry about any of those like issues. So it makes it easier to write code, but then like you said, it interferes with a lot of a lot of groups that are in those time zones. So it sounds like, technically speaking, it's possible not to have downtime at all, but it requires them kind of rethinking how they've done some of the shortcuts that they've put in the game. Or I guess some of the more like technical backend shortcuts.
This is actually a really great segue into our next Eve patch point. It's kind of great that we have so many changes to talk about. Not all the changes are huge, but it's been kind of a while to have all these changes in the game. It's kind of nice. So I like the pace. Shareable bookmarks. Possibly the biggest addition to the game that is going to be happening this quarter. Probably the next quarter, I would guess. The ability to actually share bookmarks, not just within your corp, but within your alliance, and publicly, or within other defined groups. Oh my fucking god.
How long has this been waited for?
Since bookmark launch. No. I think since launch of Wormholes. This has been one of the most asked for features in the game by a country mile. And it's finally here, and it feels so good. You can actually share bookmarks properly as an alliance now. It's using the Citadel access system kind of UI and concepts, which is, I guess, a helpful workaround for CCP because they don't have to recode what an alliance is. They just recode the bookmark system. And it's going to make life a lot easier for public groups like Spectre Fleet. It's going to make life a lot easier for anyone that's living in a wormhole. Really, anyone that's in an alliance, generally speaking, there are so many occasions where having bookmarks shared across corps would be easy. And we weren't even a very large alliance, but there were just so many times when you had to like double or triple the amount of work to get the same level of coordination and safety for your fleets with safe spots and pings. Wormholes, trying to get hither and thither, you have to make sure everyone from every corp bookmarks the entry and the exit, or everyone's going to get stuck. You know, it's just a huge hassle. And we were a small alliance. For the larger alliances, just imagine those headaches just exponentially increase.
One great example of how this is already getting used is Eve Scout. They've put their Thera wormhole bookmarks all open for public through this like subscription type thing. So basically you just go to their public channel, you click a link, and you can access their entire list of Thera bookmarks. And I tried it for the first time a couple nights ago, and it works great. I use it to cut like 10 jumps off a route.
Awesome.
That's great. And just a great example of the Thera community.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a great resource. So I was really excited that it works so well. And it's so, like, it's really, really easy just to sign up for these access lists.
Yeah, I don't think this magically undoes some of the issues that Eve is currently undergoing with, like, stagnation type stuff and the difficulty of finding targets. But I think this is a clear example of CCP actually going, what does the community want? And then putting the effort into delivering something that is not just a nice to have. This is like a huge feature that significantly moves the needle on something that is player frustrating.
These are quick wins. They should be doing them all the time. Quick wins. No. How many changes have we had today that we've had? Like, I can't see a downside to this.
Well, I think bookmarks aren't, I wouldn't characterize it as a quick win, to be honest, because, you know, from having been on the CSM, I know how difficult, like, the concept was. It kept getting brought up, but, like, the technical work involved is not insignificant. So the fact that they did put the time in to reimagine that feature in a way that works for modern Eve, it speaks to their willingness to bite the bullet and work on something big that we really want. And that in itself is somewhat encouraging. I think to call it a quick win kind of cheapens the amount of effort it probably took to do. It's a quick win, and like it's obvious that they should do it because players have been asking for it for years with very loud voices. But to actually get it done probably took a significant amount of work.
Yeah, that's fair. I suppose I kind of just wanted this a bit earlier. Like years ago.
Yeah. That's exciting. And now let's turn around to something that's utterly baffling. The fucking Hypernight Relay.
Hypernet, is that what it is? I couldn't... This came out of nowhere.
Yeah, no one was really looking for this. My guess is it's a... It's probably something Pearl Abyss encouraged them to do. It kind of makes sense meta-wise in that what it is essentially a raffle system. Now, older players and older listeners of the show will recall Summer Blink and related sites were a massive part of the Eve community for a long time, offering this exact service pretty much. You would pay some amount of ISK, you join a raffle for an item, and then after a certain amount of time or when people filled up, it would roll the dice, basically, and someone involved would win whatever prize. It basically dominated the EVE gambling meta for ages, taking over from EVE poker pretty easily.
Yep, it definitely did, and the money they brought in was staggering.
And they reinvested that money back into the community, sponsored all kinds of events. They were a huge podcast sponsor for a very long time, causing a lot of exciting things to happen. Then World War B happened, and it kind of brought into focus, I guess, the CCP, what potential meta issues might be involved with the gambling sites. Basically, the gambling sites financed a war just on their own. And, you know, I didn't have a problem with it. It seemed like it all made sense to me, given how that unfolded and how popular these things were, but apparently it caused CCP some issues. So they shut it down, allegedly over gambling regulation concerns. Apparently they weren't concerned enough, because they're bringing it back, and now it is officially CCP-sponsored, and you have to pay real money to do it.
Yeah, I think this was one of the most reasonable kind of complaints I saw when it was first rolled out, is basically people were kind of pointing back to when CCP originally banned all gambling and talked about kind of their campaign, which, you know, when everyone likes these gambling sites, you have to come up with a reason why you're taking it out of the game and not just like, oh, we don't like it, so we got rid of it. And it seemed like a lot of their reasoning was kind of around these emotional examples of players who had kind of like gotten sucked into gambling, spent a bunch of real money, and like it had kind of ruined either their EVE experience or like their real life because they were spending too much money on these gambling sites. And so it made bringing these sites or bringing Hypernet in just seem really disingenuous. It's like, well, if you really removed gambling for this reason that it was like hurting players and their real lives outside of the game, then why are you bringing gambling back?
I think, I mean, it's been, what, 5-6 years since Summer Blink came and went, and I know that the founder of Somerset Mom, along with his friends, I think Summer got banned for some shenanigans, some stuff outside, I think a disagreement and leaking of an email that was supposedly private, and they basically just banned him and all his assets. I do imagine his whole, which was quite interesting, because I actually used to do some work with Summer Blink as well. Declaration of interest, and I suppose with my real life hat on, with my medical hat on as well, the dangers of gambling addiction, certainly from the gaming point of view, it's changed very much over the years, because back when Summer Blink was on, microtransactions were still very much in their infancy, and then I think they went through a bit of a spike in terms of, you know, certain like examples like EA, who were really bad at it, and various other game companies doing it. But these things pay for themselves. And clearly they've looked back and gone, okay, it's probably long enough since we kind of, you know, quietly shut down, or not, in some cases not so quietly shut down these sites, that we're now going to put our own spin on it. And I'm not sure what to think of it, but my gut instinct is negative.
Yeah, I think I have two issues with it. One is the fact that they shut down third-party sites and then made their own site. I think that if this was entirely separate and they hadn't ever shut down gambling or talked down about gambling in the context of EVE, I think it would be a fine idea. And then the other big issue I have with it is I can see how they could have made it a lot better from like a community engagement perspective. Like made it something that's more usable by, let's say, like streamers that want to do raffles, people that want to do like corp giveaways and things like that. And just looking through the mechanics and how they work, that's not super easy to do. And I can see how they could have spun it more as like a way to get community engagement going along with like this raffling and gambling type thing. But it seems like it's really focused on kind of like the money and the raffling off things for real like USD kind of thing, or I guess whatever currency.
Yeah, I mean, if we could have rewritten EVE history, I think it would have been better if they introduced this as competition for these third party sites and put the time in to, you know, use the fact that it's in game and officially company supported to put features into it that really make it compelling for people to want to do it that way instead of going through some other site. Like, for instance, catering to streamers and making it easier to do things in corp. But the fact that they did go out and shut down the community sites so publicly and so brutally to then turn around and put the feature in the game in a way that they have monopoly on it, I think is that's pretty shitty. Leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth, but I do understand their need to make money, and it's just not a feature I'm going to personally support unless they make significant changes to it that actually like really appeals to something I need done, like maybe a corp giveaway or something like that. But in general, I just wouldn't see myself using it, and I wish that they had gone about things in a different way, but you can't rewrite the past. Anyway, overall, good changes. Hypernet Relay, certainly questionable. But, I think with CCP's Korean ownership, it's kind of inevitable we're going to see some things like that. As long as they're not terribly intrusive, I don't want to cause too much problem with it. Overall, I think a lot of the changes we've talked about have been really good around citadels, bookmarks, huge. The autocannon buffs and some of the Mimitar buffs, I think, are just slight tweaks to ships that are good, and overall buffing the autocannon weapon system, I think, in good ways. So pretty happy with general game direction at the moment, and let's just see more. Let's see some more shareable bookmark equivalents coming out of CCP next year. As far as what's going on in Nullsec itself, we had a massive Goon Locust Fleet Dread Bomb. Lee, you want to chat that up?
Yeah, so as the name implies, locusts come in swarms and they strip fields and move on, leaving nothing in their wake. And it looks like Goons do something similar with large-scale mining fleets. Now, just to kind of give a bit of the backstory to people who may not be familiar, though I suspect most people listen probably are, Fortress Delve is covered by the Goon Super Capital umbrella. Everyone there pretty much has Titans. I'm probably jesting a little bit itself, but they have more than everyone else, and their industry there is massive. But dread bombs happen. You can get dreads into range of these things fairly easy. The big targets, will often die. All the dreads will probably die. In this case, it looks like they managed to get on top of one of these big, massive Rorke War fleets, possibly with the involvement of a former Goon FC who may have been kicked out previously. I'm not quite privy to all the details on knowing what exactly is accurate there, but the Butcher's Bill was 56 Rorquals going down to the cost to the tune of over, let's have a look at the battle report here. Yeah, about 400 billion worth of Rorqual alone going down. Obviously, 85 Dreadnoughts paid the price at a total cost of 155 billion, but clearly the Butcher's Bill here favoured the attackers, and that's I don't think there's been a bigger simultaneous in one engagement loss of Rorquals that we've ever seen before.
Yeah, so I can actually add to this a little bit. So I spent a short time in Goons on an alt, just like money-making alt. And a lot of times when they do these locust fleets, it's because they have regions that are kind of like less secure, not so much under the cap umbrella. And so what they do is they set the timers for all their moon belts to come out at like sequentially. And then over the course of a couple hours, they do this and they hop from nice moon to nice moon within these regions that are less secure. It allows them to have, a cap umbrella ready to go, but not necessarily on for as long as you would need if these were all interspersed. And so that's kind of when they do these locust fleets a lot. And as far as the people that ran it, you're correct. So Pittsburgh is a former Goon FC that got kicked out, and he's been making a stir on Reddit, at least, for some of the things he's been doing. And then this is one of them. So I don't think he was the only one that was involved in planning this. I know that Omega Gold was also given some credit, as well as a couple other groups, which I forget the Reddit post and who else was involved, but there was like five groups or so that were all involved in kind of planning this big dreadball. I think there's also a video around somewhere of this happening. So I haven't gotten a chance to watch the video yet, but I think they planned it really well and absolutely wiped that fleet. So I was super happy to see it.
And the next one up is actually you as well, Andy. Yeah. I've titled this segment, Press F for Vendetta.
Yes. So, funny enough, this also involves Pittsburgh, who's the same FC that we just talked about. So I was here for this. Basically, what happened was we were formed up for just like a little roam with our court. And one of the rote works, or not rote works, but just standard rote guys, pinged and was like, hey, we're going to have a structure final timer in, you know, 20 minutes or so. If you guys want to get here and get in on it, there should be a fight. So I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So we kind of reshipped, got into Inties, and then started burning across to rote staging. And as we're getting there, we're like probably 5 to 10 jumps out, and someone goes, there's a vendetta on this this, not Astor House, but on this what's it called,
Rotaru.
On this Rotaru. And we were like, what is a vendetta doing on a Rotaru? And so everyone thought it was like a joke or bait or something, and they're like, no, this can't be right. No, it was right. They're like, yep, he's right here. And it was Trigger Happy. So it's Pittsburgh's group and everything, or the group that he joined after leaving Goons. And so they call for bombers right as we're getting there. They're undocking. So we all hop in bombers. They point the vendetta with the station. They bridge. They get bubbles on him. And then we're in bombers and dread bomb and just go to town on him. And yeah, there's like a small Gila fleet there that's supporting the vendetta, but there really wasn't anything else. So they get an inhib down so that they can't bring more caps in. And he just, I mean, he was really tanky, but he just went down. They had no support, no faxes, nothing like that. And so it was a super fun kill. The timer that we were originally going for, it repaired. It was like they were attacking a structure, but I think it was well worth letting the structure repair. And we basically, they were looking and they were like trying to figure out whose vendetta this was that just got dropped. And it was previously in Goons. So everyone was thinking it was Pittsburgh's. They made a Reddit post after the kill went down. And he actually replied to it and said it was his alt. Basically, he had said he brought it in because the bash was going slow and he wanted to speed it up. He had made a ping but didn't go to it, and then got caught. And then he thought they had had more fax support and stuff, but didn't have as many people as he originally thought. And so it wasn't worth jumping in triage to just let them get melted because they didn't have the numbers to really save it. So he just let it die. So I think, you know, props to him for, number one, using something that's super expensive and making content. And then also, you know, like the fact that he responded and kind of gave his perspective with like zero salt was really cool, because it gave a good kind of perspective of what happened on their side, why it didn't get saved, that kind of thing.
Fair play to him. And good kill.
Yeah, hell of a kill. Let's take a look at that bad boy.
Yeah, I was looking through. I have like one Titan kill that I've been on, but this is definitely more is than that. So this is now my my highest is kill. So I was pretty excited.
I was pretty devastated. I was like, I was trying to like talk to Garrick from Red Capel. I'm like, man, I really want to be at this timer. Maybe I can find a way to like slip away to the game room at my office, see if I can put Eve on a computer. But I was just basically strapped to my desk. All of a sudden, I get all these pings. Look what we did! Oh, god damn it.
Yeah, it was great, because it was definitely unexpected. But I did feel really bad. So we had one person that they were handing out purifiers, and he could only fly the Mimitar ones, so he couldn't hop in a purifier. And so he didn't get undocked in time and didn't get on the covert bridge and missed the vendetta, even though he was there in their staging on time. And I felt so bad. I was like, oh, man.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
But it was a well-fit ship. Total kill, 132 billion.
Cautionary tale, train all frigate to five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a heck of a fit. If you're not familiar with the Vendetta, I wouldn't blame you. It's a pretty rare ship. The idea is that it's a cross between the Galenti and the Mimitar as a carrier. That's kind of in the Serpentis line. It has a fairly unusual set of bonuses. The first thing it has is the Nyx bonus. 10% to fighter damage, 5% to fighter hit points. But when you train in the Mimitar carrier bonuses, that's when things get a little interesting. You get a 5% bonus to fighter velocity and a 10% bonus to stasis weaponification burst projector effectiveness. The burst projector is kind of a remote, not remote, just a long distance AoE skill shot that the super carriers can have, where it does some kind of electronic warfare effect within a fixed area. Pretty interesting combination of bonuses. Makes it really effective with the fighters, because not only do they do the damage of the Nyx, but they can also arrive on the target much faster. It also has an extra high slot, which in this case seems to have been used for a cloak, which brings some interesting capabilities to the ship. And it also has a significantly thicker tank. It's like nearly 50% more armor for its base hit points.
Yeah, it was hefty. Like, it took a while to burn down, even though they had a significant dread blob.
Hashtag thick. Well, that was cool. And speaking of stuff Gnar has done lately, we are on a contract. We'll talk about it once it's done, but I will say it's familiar targets. We've hit these guys before. So we'll see how the contract winds up playing out very shortly. Certainly by the next episode, we'll have a recap for you. And I also just wanted to give an update about Gnar Academy. We've relaunched it since the last episode of the show. This is kind of a new version of Gnar Academy. It's going to be in Corp to start with, so in Gnar itself. And it's going to feature time zone specific focus for the first time since we've ever done it. So we're looking to recruit people in one specific time zone for a certain period of time. And then we're going to cycle it where the people in that cohort are either going to graduate or not. And then we're going to work on the next time zone. Do it for a little bit of time. People that graduate or not. And then we'll do it for another time zone. We've started off with the US time zone. And the next in rotation is going to be the Australian time zone. And then we're going to focus on the European time zone. And then we'll take stock and see how that concept went. But so far, I think it's been interesting. We've also launched a new sign-up process using Google Forms, which is kind of cool. First time we've really done that. We're also going to focus the actual curriculum on a much shorter training period where we're focusing on specific classes as opposed to sort of a longer multi-month kind of more freeform experience. And we'll see how that goes. We've done sort of the month-long thing before. I think it worked out okay in the past, but it's been a while. A lot of the game has changed. A lot of people in Gnar have changed. Our gameplay time has changed. So we're going to see how this goes. We might make adjustments going forward. We may spin it back out into its own corp going forward. There are a lot of ways this could go. Andy, any other thoughts on Gnar Academy? You've been kind of instrumental in helping me get it back up and running.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of covered all the bases, but I'm pretty excited for it. It's definitely kind of a, you know, work in progress kind of prototype thing. So I'm sure it'll kind of change along the way. But I think the hope is really to get people up to speed as fast as possible, make them competent PvP pilots. And then also the idea behind the cohorts is to really give them people to fly with that are learning at the same time. I remember being in Corps and being new and everyone else like already knows what they're doing and you kind of feel like you're struggling alone. So I think it's cool to have, you know, those really experienced people to get insight from, but it's also helpful to have other people who are learning along with you to remind you that, you know, like you're getting better and you're improving and not everyone out there is already like a pro, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know how many people have actually signed up already, but I know that at least a few people have talked to me and other Gnar members about being interested in the program. So I really hope we get a good turnout and can really get like a good cohort of people who are motivated to learn and hopefully future mercenaries.
Yep, I think we have 3 official signups so far. I know there are a couple folks that are interested but haven't committed yet. And I would encourage anyone listening, if you really want to do it, you know, by all means, give it a shot. We're still accepting applications. I think the idea is we're going to have like 5 to 6 students that we accept for the program. If you want to apply, I've actually created it such that it's pretty easy. Go to tinyurl.com/noiracademy with no dots in there. Just NoiraCademy. tinyurl.com/noiracademy. Super short application. This gives us a little bit more information about your background so we can better support your learning and development. Moving on, Lave, you've got a pretty interesting host highlight.
Yeah, so I've been kind of busy. I'm probably going to be even busier in the next couple of weeks with new additions to the family incoming. But I suppose having a look at the changes, looking at the game coming up, at the game as it is with the order kind of change, thinking, what kind of ships are really good here? Like, I looked back and thought the Cinnables got the flanker Cinnables got a buff, the artillery Cinnables on change. Well, okay, that's fine. Vagabond, yep, okay, more auto cannon change, a bit more DPS, great. It's still a 4 mid slot ship that's active shield fit, and I do despair at this. I so wish that they'd just convert some slot, take a slot anywhere in the Vagabond and make it 5 slots. Please do something to make that ship more viable. Other than that, though, I've been kind of busy. Off the PC though, played Death Stranding. Very good game. Managed to platinum it after some quite considerable effort on it. And yeah, I certainly would give that game a try if you're certainly interested in it. It's a game that you would get you get out of it what you get in. The storyline is suitably Kojima. Those who know what Hideo Kojima's storylines are like will know exactly what I mean by that.
Now, Lave, with Baby Lave on the way, with you playing Death Stranding, have you considered putting it in a bottle? Just sort of wearing it around as you go about your day?
I've already been told that BB will not be considered as a name. I might get a harmonica, but I'm pretty sure it'll get thrown out the window after the first day.
Now let's move into some shout-outs. Andy, do you have a shout-out real quick?
I mean, I think my shout out would probably be the same as your shout outs, Garrick and Sven from Rogue Capel. So they're the ones that got us in on the Vendetta kill and then also got us in, on a fleet last night, a Phantasm fleet. And both were super fun, had a lot of good content, and have generally made this week really exciting. So I think my shout outs would go to them.
Yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Rogue Capel. We had a really rough relationship very early on in Nora's lifetime, but in the years since, they've really become pretty dear friends, and absolutely love them. I've actually met Garrick in person. He's such a nice guy, and that whole alliance, like, they're really rowdy and crazy and rough around the edges, but then once there's an enemy ship on field, everything changes. They become extremely professional, very clear communicators, and super high-end PvPers. It's such a cool dynamic to be in, and I've loved their fleets. Sven, in particular, is a tremendous FC. Lave, your shout-out.
Yeah, we've got a couple of shout-outs. I kind of would go along just to take along the concept here of looking at old friends. Shadow Cartel's re-informing that I was with them for a time after the fall of MC. Shadow Cartel kind of went into hibernation just because LoSec got stagnated by circumstances at the time. But since a lot of the big entities have kind of won even left them LoSec, they're trying it again. Great group of pilots that I was with. I wish them all the best. I hope that I'll maybe kind of bump into them at some point on my travels. But otherwise, as you say, they were a great group on comms. The comms were complete lots of weirdness itself. But when it came to getting your game face on, these guys were great. My other shout out goes to Ed Silver, who very, very recently surfaced on our Discord. He's an old Noir veteran who's been away for real life reasons, and it was just great to see him again, make sure he's doing okay. So all the best to Ed.
Yeah, Ed's a great guy. I hope he recovers, or hope he stops recovering from his Eve addiction and comes back. Would love to have him back in Noir. He's one of my favorite Eve players that I've ever run into. Just a quality person in general. Well, that's it, guys. Head to decorationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll. Like I said, we're recruiting for Noir and for Noir Academy now. So if you're interested, tinyurl.com/Noir Academy, or hit up our public channel, Cafe Noir Dot, to join Noir proper. We are looking for pilots of all experience levels at this point. You'll either get direct recruited into the Corp or put through the Academy program, which is a great fun experience. Even if you know some stuff about the game, it's kind of like the next level of training. We're going to teach you not just the basics of things, but really how to kick ass, manually pilot, how to handle specific circumstances we've run into a lot, the ins and outs of kiting mechanics, the ins and outs of target selection, all this kind of stuff that's going to go well beyond your basic EVE PvP training. So I really encourage people to reach out, hit us up, join up, come have some fun. Wherever you are, whoever you're flying with, good hunting, listeners.